Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Pi Radio, Manchester's number one youth ed radio station. My name's Gerns. I am here with Halima.
Wow, I can really hear you on this mic.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, I'll let you decide.
Let me try. I'll try turning you down.
No, it's fine.
Any better?
It's fine. I can hear myself as well. I've got the flu tinge to my voice because I've like just about recovered.
Oh, you're on the recovered side. That's good.
Yeah. I'm on the better side of it.
Cool. We have also got Simran via stream.
Hello.
Hey, girlfriend.
Oh, it works. Hooray.
Only one side is working for me. Right, but we'll have to take it.
We'll take it. Aside from that, how has everyone been?
Not great, firstly. Yeah, girl. I don't know what Slough is saying. I don't know what Slough is saying, but
probably quite tropical compared to you guys.
Oh,
I've heard.
My God. Like, I just came in today, like, with a coat into the studio and an extra hoodie that I had to use as an umbrella because I don't know. I can't find a single umbrella at home. But it's like, I was just driving on the motorway here and it's like, I had to go at like 50 miles on the motorway because I can't see. Like, I actually can't see.
Oh, I was actually, I was going 70 in the fast lane.
No, it was more. It was raining more than
before.
We found a way to slow her down.
How long ago? Like 2 hours ago when I arrived here.
Oh, ha.
I'm taking a double dose. I've been forgetting the last few days.
Of what?
Probably vitamin D.
Vitamin D, guys. Be taking your vitamin D. Make sure.
I have actually been taking my supplements the last, like...
These are the out-of-date supplements that Carlos assured me would be fine to take.
Yeah, they are. Of course they are.
Yeah, they only went out of date last summer.
Capitalist scheme to try and get you to buy more, the whole going out of date.
Sell by date, a capitalist scheme.
I'll be real, I think they're working.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, I want to start off with Halima. You've assured us that you have a funny story to kick things off.
Oh, you want to start with it?
Yeah. Cool. We start because we know inevitably we're going to go down a depressing trail eventually.
No. Well, can we ban it for the winter? I'm already fighting this SAD with both hands, man.
Come on, Halima.
Let me tell you guys a funny story. So basically, this was like at the start of the year when everyone was away in my family apart from my sister and my dad. And my sister was at home and one day she gets like a delivery in the post and it's addressed to someone that we don't know. And she opens it up and it's like a pair of like, I can't remember, like expensive trainers for like a teenager. She's like, what on earth is this? A few days later, we get a letter in the post and like a handwritten letter. Not a typed letter, a handwritten letter, which is like interesting, right? Because who receives handwritten letters these days?
Have we gone back like 50 years?
So she opens up the letter and basically it's a boy. We actually still have the letter at home. It's this little boy, it's a teenage boy, who's basically written that he ordered a pair of trainers and his house is exactly the same address. It's the same address as ours, but in Bilston. So the same number, same road. But Bilston, which is like in Bilston? The in West Midlands, like near Wolverhampton. And he's been like, I've accidentally ordered it to your house. The shoes cost £89.99. Like, please, can you send them back? You can contact us on this number or this number or this number. And obviously my sister was like, yeah, cool, no worries. So she like reached out and whatever. And they explained that he ordered it and he ordered it wrong. He's just like a young boy. He's like a young teenage boy. And then she was like, yeah, don't worry, like, I'll send them back to you, don't worry, like, she got the address off them. And then it was like Christmas, New Year's time, so she had like exams, she was at uni at this time, so she had like exams, so she hadn't got round, she hadn't got round to sending the shoes back to the guy. And then one day she receives a text message, and I'm gonna read it to you. It goes, hi, I can see you have decided to just keep the shoes. You are just playing games with my mind by keeping on telling me story after story. But hey, if that's the case, you go ahead and keep what does not belong to you. These shoes are not worth for more than £100, but still it would be a blessing to you by being honest to return what does not belong to you. And then in capital letters, do not forget this. What goes around comes around. We live in a small world. Still in capital letters, you may end up paying for something more than this sooner or later. Karma is real. I'm sure you understand what I mean. Thanks.
Oh my gosh.
That's a threat.
That is a threat.
That's literally, my sister got this text and she was like, what the heck? Like, she replies back being like, I'm so sorry, I've had exams. Like, I'm a uni student, that's why I've not been able to send them off. But like, I feel bad, I've paid for like first class next day delivery. And then the mom basically responds to my sister and she's like, oh, I'm really sorry. The little boy's name is Ben. And she's like, Ben was like really impatient for his shoes, so I had to delete your number off his phone. But then he got a hold of the household mobile phone and like has messaged you off there, like probably with the help of his sister. And the mum was, she was really nice. She was like, let me refund, let me pay you, like compensate you £30 for the verbal abuse that you've endured.
Like when you say teenager, how old?
I think he must have been like 12, 13, 14, like around age. And then my sister was like, no, it's fine. Like, you don't need to pay me. It's okay. I understand that he's a kid, whatever. And then like however many hours later, my sister's like sleeping. She gets a call. She picks up and then it's the mom. And she's like, somebody has something to say to you. and then it's a little boy, like very, very sheepishly. He's like, hello, big sister. They're obviously like West African, like from the name and like the way the mum was talking and like the fact that the little boy held the phone. He was like, hello, big sister, I'm really sorry. Like, I didn't mean it. It's my fault. I was so impatient.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah,
it was so funny. It's so cute.
Lessons to be learned across the board.
For all parties. For all parties. But it's just so funny. Like, he literally, like, he stole the house phone. And that's literally threatened her. But it's the way...
How do you text from a house phone?
But the threat... I think the threat was threatening.
Okay.
Like, the threat was scary because he literally has your address. The world is small, man.
He was really like, karma is real. Like, and you know what? Like,
point.
Like, you know, West Africans, specifically like Nigerian people, you know, they have like a very... I say like a masterful rendering of like English, the way they use English, the way they speak. Oh, this is obviously like a West African. He was like, you will end up paying for this in something much greater later on.
Yeah.
Like, that's a curse.
So eloquent.
That's a curse.
Well, hopefully the curse has been redacted.
Yeah, no. Bless. Yeah. And the mum...
Have the shoes been delivered?
She sent them off. She sent them off. But then bless the mum. She literally was like, I'm going to send you £30 into your account for compensation.
Oh my gosh. Well, like I said, lessons to be learned on all sides. But then on the flip side, at least it was a funny experience.
It was. It was. It's harmless because he's a little boy. But it's just so funny.
When you said teenager, I was hoping it'd be the bottom end of the scale because that's not scary. If you said it was like a 17, 18-year-old, I would have been like, oh, God.
Yeah. No. I think he was a young boy.
For goodness sake.
Oh, lessons to be learned. Very funny.
Very cute. And something that I think would also only happen to you and your family as well.
It's so ridiculous. An 11-year-old threatening my sister.
Well, that actually doesn't sound that like out of pocket for your family, actually.
It doesn't, does it? No.
Right. Moving on to... I wouldn't call this Bad Vibes Island. It's more just kind of like interesting vibes island, what's going on now. We've got our own set of farmers protests going on right now. We're copying Punjab.
I did not know this.
Yeah, it's just a very different kind of
I actually just don't even have a commentary on this as your resident Punjabi person. Like, I just don't even know what to say. Like,
yeah, well,
I can't even get into the racialization of caring about one more in the media. I know obviously this isn't India, but obviously the way that people care about things obviously comes across as very different if we're going to go there.
Yeah. But I think
I did see one sign that was basically calling what the farmers are going through as like a genocide on farmers. And I was like, that's crazy.
Oh my God.
The co-opting of like language is just so interesting. Like, call it what it is. Like, it could be a worthwhile cause in itself without you having to like borrow from other causes in such a like insulting way.
But I think it's also worth us actually unpacking what the actual cause is and whether actually it is deserving of as much support as is being made out through these protests. So the reason why these people are protesting is because in the budget 2 weeks ago, inheritance tax relief on agricultural land was removed. So previously, big landowners were able to pass on all of their agricultural land without paying inheritance tax on it via this tax relief. As a result of this, the mega rich people across Britain have been looking to basically snatch up and buy agricultural land as a means of avoiding inheritance tax. So you have all these rich billionaires, whatever, that have all this money and they're like, when I die or whatever, I don't want to have to pay inheritance tax, which I believe is 40% of your income once it surpasses a threshold, I believe. But they're all like, oh, we don't want to pay this. So what are we going to do? We're going to use all our money and put it into buying agricultural land, because then when we die, we don't have to pay inheritance tax on that. So this is why Labour in their new budget have decided to remove this tax relief. And it has just been quite funny to kind of see the people that have been showing up to these protests, namely the likes of Andrew Lloyd Webber, who is allegedly a known tax avoider, and also Jeremy Clarkson. And it was particularly funny because he was actually interviewed by the BBC by Victoria Derbyshire, and he was questioned about why he was there. And they asked him, does this have anything to do with the fact that you are trying to avoid inheritance tax? And he was like, oh, absolutely not, like classic BBC, blah, blah, blah. And they literally quoted him in 2021. He said to the Sunday Times, one of the main reasons why he has put his money in agricultural land is to avoid inheritance tax.
Oh my God, people like, why are you pretending? Like, it's the pretense is almost like insulting. We know you don't give a rat's behind about farmers' livelihoods. Mm. We know you do not care about the agricultural industry.
Yeah.
You just want to protect your wealth. You want to hoard your wealth. You want to protect your own wealth. That's what it is.
And this is the thing as well, is that I don't know whether... I don't want to speak out of turn because obviously I'm not well-versed in the farming industry and the various monetary challenges that they face. However, it's my understanding that the mega rich people that have been snatching up this agricultural land has actually negatively impacted farmers because the price of agricultural land just keeps rising. The ordinary farmers can't buy it, and the mega rich are buying it and basically hiring people for that land, and it's all just working out in their favor.
So it's like gentrification of the farm, isn't it?
Like, it's crazy if you think about it. But I also saw this list of like the top 10 biggest landowners in the UK, like by acreage or whatever. And everyone was a duke.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. Of course.
Like, it's all like nobility and the ultra rich.
Exactly. Like, land ownership also has like a very kind of significant historical political contingency where it is like they call it landed gentry for a reason, you know, that phrase, like, it's not just gentry, it's landed gentry. Like, if you like, a lot of the time, like, your kind of wealth has historically been kind of hoarded through land ownership, and class statuses have been maintained through land ownership and things like that. So it is definitely a continuation of like kind of very, very well established class structures, in my opinion.
Yeah. The thing is as well, like I say, I'm not sure whether those that are protesting actually understand what's going on, because following the budget, agricultural estates are now going to have to pay 20% inheritance tax on a new 1 million threshold when they're passed on to the next generation. And that's only half of the standard inheritance tax rate of 40%. Generous exemptions still remain. The Chancellor is also suggesting that many farming families can, in effect, pass up to 3 million tax-free to their children if the farm is owned by a married couple. And they've also said that actually they estimate that maybe 73% of farmers are actually going to remain unaffected by this. So it's only the mega, it's the massive, the actual farmers that actually do have a lot of wealth that are going to be affected by this. Your standard farmer is not actually going to be affected by this. That's my understanding.
It's not about land. It's not about livelihood. It's not about the agricultural industry. It's about wealth, and it's about the hoarding of wealth and the fact that the rich do not want to be taxed on the wealth that they have hoarded. And the mechanisms that they have found to hoard their wealth. That's what it is.
And if anyone's wondering as well, like, why the mega rich do have to pay inheritance tax and what the actual function of it is, if you think about it, people that are really rich, people that have ancestries of these dukes and whatnot, if they're able to just continue passing down wealth after wealth after wealth, first of all, you really can't argue that, oh, this person has worked for it, whatever, because it literally is just handed down money. Second of all, how do you expect any of that wealth to actually contribute anything, see the light of day in any other kind of society? It just creates that further divide and enables that to continue through generations.
Well, that's why it's called hoarding. Like that, you're literally hoarding wealth, you're tying it into an asset, and you're just leaving it there to be passed on from generation to generation, to not contribute to the economy, to not be productive in any kind of way, just to keep you rich.
Yeah. It's currently worth noting as well that currently only 4% of the UK actually pays inheritance tax. So it's not, it's only affecting those at the very top of the food chain, essentially.
Yeah.
And when Jeremy Clarkson was given this figure, and then he suddenly turned it around and said, well, after this, 96% of farmers are going to be affected by this. And Victoria Derbyshire was literally like, where have you got that figure from? And he literally was like, oh, from my head, like what Rachel Reeves has done. It's like, you, yeah.
People are just, like, just say you're greedy and you don't want to share your wealth. Just say you want to hoard your wealth. That's it.
It is just, it's just so, like I say, it's just such a funny thing to see the likes of him, Andrew Lloyd Webber, all these like mega rich people actually showing up on the streets for a cause. And what's at the root of this cause in reality? The fact that they're...
wealth distribution. Oh no, that's the cause that's galvanized you. Not poverty, not the cost of living, not literally people dying from not being able to eat or not being able to heat their house, not nurses at food banks, not child poverty. Wealth distribution. That's what's got your pants in, what's the phrase?
Knickers in a twist.
Your knickers in a twist.
Which is usually a sexist phrase, but I think in this phase, in this thing, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone else has anything to say on this farmers thing, but I thought it was just interesting. Like when I actually,
you got a laugh in it. You got a laugh.
Again, I just don't really understand the farmers, the ordinary farmers that are showing up for these protests. I'm not really sure as to why, like, if it's not actually going to affect them, like, what are they scared of, kind of thing. I don't know, but yeah, and it is just funny to see, like, in comparison with the farmers protests that are going on in Punjab, where they're literally getting on the tractors and like traveling,
which
like
is
hundreds
still happening,
of miles,
by the
yeah,
way.
Exactly,
it's still going on. And I think also what they're protesting is very different.
I was
gonna
say completely
literally a threat to their livelihoods completely. These laws that they're protesting are such a direct threat to their livelihoods and their jobs and their ability to finance anything and make money for their family, and the extent to which farmers are the backbone of the livelihood of Punjab and like fund so much to the rest of India in terms of like everything that they cultivate.
Yeah.
So and the fact that there's real repercussions, like look at the rates of farmer suicides. Like people are literally killing themselves because they do not have a living.
Like, whereas like
these people just want to save millions of pounds. Like extra on top.
Also, it's like after they're gone as well. Like, I get that obviously you care about like your family and stuff, but it is, it's hoarding from beyond the grave.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No,
but it is. Like, you know, like, I get that you want to like leave like a good like money for your family and whatever, but I'm also just kind of like, you're not going to be around to actually see that. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
That's it. This is biblical levels of greed, guys.
Yeah. Moving on. Simran, you obviously pointed out on the chat, which we're a bit confused about because we thought this has already happened, but the International Criminal Court has issued a war crimes arrest warrant for Netanyahu, his now sacked defense minister Yoav Gallant, and also a Hamas commander Mohammed Deif, who was involved in the 7th October attack, who Israel actually claimed was killed in July anyway.
Sorry, I have a question.
Yeah, go on.
I know we discussed this, and we think this is obviously the second time this has happened, right? This is the second bout of arrest warrants that have come out, right?
Yeah, or maybe we're thinking incorrectly, and it was a different like court or something.
This is the ICJ.
I always thought it was yeah.
No, the ICJ was first, and this is the ICC. I think
maybe that's what it is, but yeah.
Either way, those are two internationally recognized organizations that have issued arrest warrants. What does that say for like our governments, both Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer, for being like supportive of it now? Like you actually can't support people that have arrest warrants.
Well, it's interesting.
Well, it depends. I think like what is it that they have to be a member of?
I'm not sure, but I know Keir Starmer's response to this has been that Downing Street respects the independence of the ICC after these warrants have been issued. However, a domestic court process would be required before Netanyahu's faced arrest.
If domestic where?
As in
the UK.
In the UK. So basically it's saying, have you seen that video of Vanessa Hudgens when COVID first was like,
oh,
thing? And she's like, I respect it, but it's basically, that is like, I respect what you're saying, I respect, but also then we're not going to do anything about
it. It's crazy because it's like, basically, I can't remember the name of like the organisation where the countries are basically they cede to The Hague. The US isn't a member. Israel isn't a member. So basically, the arrest warrant doesn't apply to them. But two-thirds of the countries in the world are a member.
Two-thirds of the countries of the world now. Basically, what it means is that if Netanyahu goes to basically 66% of, like, the world's countries, they will arrest him. They'll transport him to The Hague, and he will, like, stand trial. Basically, that's what it means, which is significant because it is the kind of global majority. It's significant because it kind of validates, I guess, the fact that what has been going on in Israel are war crimes.
Yeah.
They have been committed by Netanyahu as kind of like the figurehead of the Israeli state. The difficult thing now, and the bit where people are kind of like, oh, well, it doesn't make any difference, is like how it's enacted.
Yeah.
Because it's not likely that he's going to go to these countries, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well,
but I would say it's a good thing. It's a good thing because it's not even that it provides a legal framework, because it's like we've been new. Do you know what I mean? We've been new that it's illegal. We've been new that it's morally wrong. But, like, I guess it's a vindication in a way, more than anything.
Yeah, and I suppose it kind of makes even more apparent the, like, suggested reasons why the US is considering to continuing to offer its unwavering support to Israel, in the fact that you've got Western countries like Canada, France, Spain, Belgium, Ireland, Italy, Netherlands and Switzerland that have all now said that if Netanyahu steps foot in their country, they will arrest him. However, the US response to this from President Biden has been to call it outrageous, and the thing that he's most made a point of doing is saying, whatever the ICC might imply, there is no equivalence, none, between Israel and Hamas. We will always stand with Israel against threats to its security. So again, pointing to this fact.
Yeah, there is no symmetry between Israel and Hamas. Mm. One has committed a genocide of, what, like, nearing 50,000 people. Like, one...
Obviously, he's making the point of being like, yeah, oh, one's
Hamas,
like this.
Hamas and the devil in this. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's very interesting to see kind of like on a global arena, like kind of diplomatic relations. I wonder if that will impact kind of these relations between countries. I do think it's causing a starker divide day by day.
Yeah. Mm. I do Israel have come out and said that these arrest warrants are anti-Semitic.
They have, yeah, which is insane.
They, like, actually made reference to, what was it? So I've got it here. Yeah, so Netanyahu literally made reference on Thursday. He said, the anti-Semitic decision of the International Court in The Hague is a modern Dreyfus trial, and it will end the same way. And what the Dreyfus trial was actually a high-profile case of anti-Semitism in France, like, around a century ago. So he's literally, like, pointing out to an actual anti-Semitic thing and saying, oh, this is the same as that. Look, it's happening all over again.
I mean, this whole thing has occurred under the blanket of anything said against it as being anti-Semitic. So that doesn't surprise me that this is their reasoning.
Yeah.
It's scary because it's like US and like the UK, for example, are two kind of very big, large global superpowers, right? With like massive influence globally. Power as well, the US especially. And it's kind of like if something like the ICC and The Hague, which is, I would argue, one of the foremost kind of courts of like law and order in the world, if their decisions cannot be respected by one of the largest superpowers in the world, then global, like nation superpowers, like, what does that mean for like law and order?
It does just kind of make more apparent that there is like a certain threshold, and if you fall above that threshold, then you can't get away with anything.
You could do whatever you want. Like, if the US are backing you, you can genuinely do whatever you want. And it seems like the US are custodians of kind of global law and order, and they're the ones that get to decide what's right and what's wrong. And in this situation, because they've sided with Israel, they're allowed to do, well, basically this entire genocide with kind of near impunity, you know?
Yeah. But I think it'll also be interesting to see how things change, if at all, with Trump as well. Like, I don't know.
They won't.
No.
They won't. At all.
No. Sigh.
If anything, they might even get worse.
Yeah. Bad vibes, world. Moving on. This is actually something that's actually poking a bit of fun, actually. So this is a bit of a, like, light-hearted thing to get us back above water, essentially. Halima, I reckon you're probably the most, like, film fanatic amongst us. Have you seen Gladiator?
I actually haven't.
No.
No, I haven't.
I haven't.
Oh, great chat.
No.
Well, the thing is...
No, it doesn't really matter. It's just, like, it's related to this.
You know what it is? It's like, I always say, like, I think things from, like, the early, like, the late 90s, the early noughties, you kind of have to assume that I have a very immigrant frame of, like, cultural reference.
Mm.
Like, beyond Bollywood, I did... You know, I didn't grow up with, like, Disney.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't start watching Disney films, like, till much later on in life. Like... All these, like, you know,
yeah,
Western, Hollywood, UK films, I didn't watch till much, much later on. There's still cult classics that I haven't watched. Like, I only recently watched, like, Clueless and Legally Blonde for the first time. Like, I've not 28,
seen those.
At 28,
I've not seen anything.
I've not seen Clueless. Legally Blonde, good film. I like
I've only just recently watched it.
You should watch it.
I don't, I live under a rock when it comes to films.
Yeah, but that's me, like, someone as who likes and watches films. Mm. Like, it was all just, yeah. I'm not going to lie, if it's not Bollywood, I've not heard of it.
Yeah. Well,
I have
yeah.
seen the first Gladiator, but I only watched it, like, 2 years ago.
Well, that's what I mean. So you've seen, they've obviously released a new one, right?
Yeah.
And it's got Paul Mescal in it. And they had the premiere for that, and Paul Mescal was being interviewed, and he was asked about the fact that, I think King Charles was there, or he was interested in the film, and... Paul Mescal was asked, like, about, are you excited to, like, meet, like, King Charles or whatever? And he literally said, his response was, "It's definitely not something that I thought was in the bingo cards. I'm Irish, so it's not on the list of priorities."
I was going to say, I was like, isn't he Irish?
Good.
He was literally like, "I'm Irish, I don't care." Like,
good.
Yeah, but you know what? We're at a point where you can say that now on, like, a very big platform, and
it's because people don't care about the king the way that they cared about the queen. And yeah. Secondly, listen, one thing about the Irish is they are brazen in their kind of, like, disdain or their contempt or their enmity for the Brits, which is completely
justified.
They are brazen. And I think it's because, like, they don't have that same racialization.
Yeah.
Like, because they're also white. Yeah. I think there's a level of protection that they get. Like, for example, if it was... I know if it's us, it's like, go back to your own country, then you're ungrateful. Like, this country's taking you in and blah, 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 blah. Whereas I think because they're also white, like, there is... They can maybe, like, get away with saying a bit more.
Assimilation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know? We love Guinness. You guys are cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I listen, when Irish people are talking about the Brits, my ears are open. I'm loving it.
Yeah, no, because it was, like, obviously it used to be the signs, like, no blacks, no dogs, no
Irish.
Irish.
No, they suffered a lot. Yeah. They went through a lot at the hands of the Brits.
And,
like
people don't realise as well that they were, like, the OG colonised as well, like, way back when. Like, they have, like, suffered massive, like, economic, cultural...
Famine.
Like, yeah, exploitation at the hands of England and Britain, with the British monarch as the figurehead of that.
Yeah.
And even, like, as recent as, like, the end of the 20th century of the Troubles and everything that went on there.
I mean, to this day, we have a divided island, you know? Like, yeah. And it's not for nothing.
Yeah. So, with that in mind, I think probably the person who asked him, they were either looking for a reaction or they were just a bit uneducated. But yeah,
I'm glad he said it though.
Yeah, good on him. I have heard that people have been like, his performance in the film was a bit like they prefer him in series rather than films, if that makes sense.
Oh, right.
But yes. Like, yeah, still good on him.
I've not actually seen him in anything.
You're not seeing
normal people.
Yeah,
no,
that's the one that I watch.
Okay. One thing about me is I don't watch, like, really emotional things because I'm genuinely very, like, emotionally vulnerable, and, like, I'm very soft. Like, I cry at everything. I'm such a crier. So, like, things that are, like, really, really, like, super emotional, I don't watch. Like, that one, Normal People, I didn't watch. There's another film that I want to watch, but I don't let, like, Past Lives. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
It's like a super emotional film. Like, I have not let myself watch that.
But, like, I said this to Carlos. Like, I don't watch, not even just, I don't watch serious films. I stick to, like, rom-coms. That's about as serious as it gets for me.
Oh, really? No, I like a bit of drama.
Or sad things, because I just take it on. Like, it becomes me for, like, a week. And then it just wrecks my mood for so long. I said this to Carlos. Like, I was like, that's why I don't watch films, because it just... for like a whole week, it's all I'm thinking about. I'm just such an empath.
Such an empath.
Simran's still not recovered from watching Saltburn at the beginning of this shit.
I've not recovered from Saltburn. Saltburn is about as serious as it gets for me. It doesn't really get
I've not watched
more messed
it still.
Up than that.
Yeah, I don't think I
think I read the synopsis and it just sounds a bit odd, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mad that we're a year on from that.
That's crazy.
It's been a year.
Yeah, it came out like this time last year. So I watched it around New Year's.
Oh.
Madness. But yeah, good
time
on.
Time just flies, doesn't it?
Good on, yeah, it does fly. Good on Paul Mescal. Okay, let's stay on the lighthearted stuff and go into a bit of a music-related segment. Simran, I'll come to you. Any thoughts on New Kendrick?
I've not listened to the
I
album
haven't listened
yet.
To it, but I am really into like surprise album drops. Like I am so here for like no marketing, no rollout, no nothing. Mm. Like just on a Friday afternoon.
All my family have said like it's genuinely really, really good.
Apparently it's really good.
Yeah.
Good. What's but good? I wanted to talk less about like the actual like artistry and more about one specific bit in it in terms of a dig that he's made. And I don't know, or suppose a dig. So the lyrics in one of his songs is, "Don't let no white comedian talk about no black women, that's law." And people are thinking that that's a dig at the whole S&G podcast. And remember how they went on that they went on that podcast and we talked about it a couple of...
I'm not going to lie, I don't think Kendrick is concerning himself with...
I think it's probably just like a that's a reach. I'm sorry, but it's probably just a general statement.
Because
like,
it's not exactly an uncommon phenomenon. Like it's
Kendrick
pretty
Lamar's
common.
Like here, and that's like
yeah.
It's out of his scope.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty. I mean, he could see it. He's online, but I don't. I think that it's a thing. Like white men trolling black women. Like it's not.
Yeah.
They weren't the first. They're not the last. Like they're
and
not.
Also,
it's not unique.
Yeah.
Which I
and
think,
also what. S&G kind of got fire for was for not stepping in, and that's also been a thing in the spotlight and stuff like that as well. So it's probably just like a
but I think that says a lot as well, the fact that we can say that it probably was something else because it's such a prolific thing. Like if that shows like how bad it is, the fact that that's not a singular instance.
Yeah, but I think it's a reach to say it was about that particular event.
That's interesting because people are actually running with it, like on like, you know, Shadeburr and that. They're all like, yeah, good on
them.
But
they would though, because that is
that's their level of understanding.
Yeah.
Simran just went, we get it.
Right. Well, moving on to the next music related thing. Wretch32 tweeted something this week I wanted to get your thoughts on it. His tweet was, "Forgive your parents, they were learning as well."
Okay, so I mean, stuff like thing, that right? really breaks my heart because I just think like the whole thing of like it's your mum and dad's first time too, like it's their first time doing life as well, like, and that kind of does get me. Obviously, it's not an excuse for like actual generational trauma and like sometimes parents you can have tough parental relationships and stuff like that. I'm not excusing that. There are a lot of cases where it's genuinely valid, but I think I'm trying to I'm trying to understand and be softer towards my mom sometimes and just be like, she's going through stuff too, like let me be a little bit more compassionate. I'm trying to work on my empathy, you know, and just kind of be like, not everything needs to be like, oh, this is triggering and this is this and this is that. Like, it just needs to be like, in the moment, rational, calm down. And I think doesn't stop me from, you know, sometimes being like, oh my God, this woman, get me away from her right now. But on the whole, I'm working on it. But it's a long process as well. Like, it doesn't just happen overnight. It takes years.
So you're on the side, you're leaning more towards agreeing with what Rhett just said on the whole.
Yeah, I think so. And I think especially like children or grandchildren of immigrants wise, we speak about generational trauma a lot, passing it down, the way that things like emotional processing, dealing with trauma, a lot of people that like parents and grandparents have witnessed things that have caused PTSD and they don't even have the language tools to explain what they're feeling, what their symptoms are and how they're dealing with it. men especially have just been told to keep it down and not speak about their emotions and stuff like that. That is something, especially as South Asians, we witness in our parents and grandparents. So I think for me personally, I'm trying to come at it with more compassion these days and try and like dismantle it as much as you can from within. And just, I think the goal is just not to pass it on to your own children, but to just, for right now, treat your parents and grandparents with as much compassion and kindness as possible, because we don't necessarily understand what they've been through the same way they don't understand what we've been through, because it's just different generations.
Stops the sim room. No. Any thoughts, Halima?
For those of you who watched our suspect challenge video, Carlos's last thing for me, I could sit here and talk about parental relationships all day long. Genuinely, I would say like it is probably one of the singularly most defining kind of experiences of my kind of like self-formation is my relationship with my parents. But I recognize that my situation is a bit different. I completely agree with Simran in the sense where like, if you are like, in the absence of like any kind of abuse, obviously, I think the presence of abuse changes everything. If you're just kind of like a typical family and you have like typical family squabbles or whatever, in that situation, I completely agree, especially when your parents, like if you have immigrant parents, like the things that they've gone through, you can't understate that, you know? I think the presence of like abuse changes a lot though, because now you're kind of having to, truthfully, like, I don't think I've ever spoken about it on radio about my relationship with my parents, but like I personally have had a very like tumultuous relationship with my dad like my whole life, and it's so difficult. I could genuinely talk about it for like 57 hours straight, but I've always found myself at this crossroad between like trying to hold him to account, drawing my own boundaries, taking myself out of situations, you know, doing those things, versus humanizing the real life trauma and the hardships that he's gone through, trying to understand why he is the way that he is, understanding that it's all learned behaviors and all of these things. And it's like genuinely, even now at 28 years of age, it's still a constant battle for me between kind of, I hate him, I never want to talk to him, I'm leaving, I'm cutting him off, blah, 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 versus like, oh, but that's my dad, and like, he's had a hard time, and like, you know, it's not his fault, he can't help it, blah, blah, blah. Genuinely, even now, I am always fluctuating between the two, truthfully. So that is, don't clip this, Carlos, but like, the amount of I mean, like, you can, but like, this specific bit. The amount of times I leave home, guys, ask these guys, it's like, at least like, once every 6 months I've left home, my dad's kicked me out, like, it's just, and I'm convinced. I'm like, I'm never coming back. I'm never talking to him again. I'm cutting him off. And then, like, I get, and genuinely, when there are moments of, like, kind of, at the height of, like, trauma between me and my dad, or, like, the height of abuse, I'm convinced, like, I do not want anything to do with this man. I am living the rest of my life without him. And then eventually, when that kind of pain or that trauma or that anger subdues and your heart softens, you're like, ah, but that's my dad, like, you know, I always say, you know, one thing that I realize as someone who has genuinely, you know, attempted and even gone as far as like kind of cutting myself off or whatever, there's one wound that will always stay with you. And I say that's the parent wound. I think like partners, lovers, relationship, friends, all of these relationships, they can traumatize you, they can hurt you, but you can like get over it. You can let go of those things. I think the parent wound is something that you can never let go of, because they're the people that brought you into this earth. You only have one of them. You are like existentially tied to your parents. I know that people can determine their relationships, but I even think in the absence of your parents, that they're always going to be a spectral figure, you know? So I don't know. I think personally, it makes me think a lot about like the kind of parent that I want to be, and more importantly, don't want to be.
Yeah, I think that's what Simran was saying, wasn't it? Like, not the best.
I feel like the best thing you can do is just break the cycle yourself. And I think as well, like, it's very difficult because us as a generation, on the whole, we're very self-actualized. We very much speak the therapy speak. We know a lot about the processes and the cycles of trauma and how they manifest, symptoms and what they look like, PTSD, depression, anxiety, psychosis, whatever it may be, right? We are so hyper aware of these things, maybe to a fault sometimes, but we are so hyper aware of these things. You cannot put that on someone who has never learned that in their life and has never had that in society and their generation. My mum would always shout at me for being like, stop therapizing me, because I'd be like an 18-year-old trying to be like, let's take a minute, like, let's regroup, what's going on here? And she would start screaming at me. And now obviously I realize how ridiculous I was being, but it's just because you can't put that on someone else who hasn't been brought up like that. You can maybe implement it slowly through calm conversations and stuff like that, but yeah, in the height of emotion when someone's screaming at you and you're going like, this is not rational, like, that's just silly. Do you know what
also,
I mean,
like,
that was my fault.
One thing I've realized is that our parents have a lot of like disorders. Like, our parents, they be having PTSD, anxiety, depression. Yeah. My dad 100% has ADHD. I've got it from my dad. Like, he probably has, like, a personality disorder.
Yeah.
If I sit here and tell you about examples of what my father is like in the house, you lot will, like, anyone who I talk to about it, like, when I give specific examples, everyone is like, it's clinically not right. Like, clinically, there's something going on there, you know? And, like, these people, the hard thing is that they don't even realise there's anything wrong with them because they have no concept of disorders and mental illnesses and things like that, you know? So for them, they're just being normal and this is just life.
Yeah. And I think if a stranger came up to you on the street and started saying this and they were a 60-year-old man, and you would sympathize with them, but because you have such a tumultuous, you have such an in-depth relationship with them, you don't come at it the same way. But at the end of the day, they're fighting against their brain sometimes because they might have something undiagnosed, which I'm sure is rampant in our community, like so many undiagnosed conditions, especially to do with depression, anxiety and PTSD, but they don't have the tools to cope and to deal with it.
One of my cousins, oh, sorry, go on.
Go on. No, go on.
I was going to say, one of my cousins, her job is, like, she diagnoses people with, like, ADHD and autism. That's her job. So she's very, very in tune. And she genuinely walks through family gatherings now, pointing at various elders. They're autistic. They've got ADHD. This. And I'm like, I'm sure there's truth to it. Like, she actually knows what she's talking about. That's her job. That's her profession. So it's, like, so many things that we just kind of have to, that we have suffered, you know, we've suffered at the hands of their symptoms of various disorders that they have. And we sit there and we're like, oh my God, like, why are we going through this? Why are we burdened with this? And then you grow up and you realize it's because there's something actually wrong with them. That's not, it's not just how it is. It's not how it's supposed to be. There's something clinically wrong here.
And I think it's hard. Like, I think back to being a teenager, and I think as a teenager you're quite selfish, like you're only able to really think about yourself, at least for me anyway. Like, I found it very hard to think past that. Like, I don't know, like, if I couldn't understand why, like, my mum would be like stressed out about loads of things and I'd be like, so and so at school said this and it really upset me, and I'd come home in bits, and it's like, and she would scream at me and I'd be like, oh, but then she couldn't understand why I was upset over something stupid, and I'm like, why are you shouting at me? This is like the worst thing that's happened to me ever. Do you know what I mean?
I find like, a, you know, like, South Asian mother-daughter relationships really, really interesting. Like, people talk about it all the time online about how like that dynamic between South Asian mothers and daughters, it's like you're best friends but you enemies as well, and it's like you kind of go your whole life not understanding each other, hating each other, having really tumultuous relationships, and then one day you just kind of become best friends. Like, people say that all the time about
I think we had a rough like 10 years when I was like a teenager. It was rough until I went to university, and now we're really close. So I do agree.
I think it's a bit, sorry, go on.
It was, in general, South Asian aside, mother-daughter relationships are complex.
I don't have a typical mother-daughter relationship with my mom at all. Like, I'm the parent. Like, I know people say like, oh, I'm the parent. Like, I'm actually, as in, like, my mom doesn't, like, she doesn't parent. Like, I don't know how, like, I mean that as literally as I can. Like, she doesn't make any decisions in the house about any of her kids. Like, she doesn't do anything. She doesn't know what's going on half the time. Like, it's all me, you know, and I have to parent her as well. So I tell my mom, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to behave like this, you have to do this with my sister, you have to do that with my sister, blah, 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 you know, like, don't let this sister do this, don't let that sister do that. Like, I have that relationship with her, which is a whole different conversation of that, when that mother-daughter, or that parent-child relationship gets, like, completely turned on its head. Very interesting.
I will say, like, I've seen it a lot, especially on, like, TikTok. And I think TikTok is a big vessel for, like, over-therapizing things a lot of the time. But I will say, like, I've seen a lot of things, like, videos of, like, moms with their daughters speaking about their daughters or whatever. And a lot of the comments have said stuff like, your mom can be your first enemy. Like, your mom can be a girl's first bully kind of thing. Like, a girl's first bully is her mother.
I've seen that, yeah.
And
yeah,
I do
yeah.
think for a lot of people that is very true. And a lot of things like self-image, body image, eating behaviors, especially yeah, like literally the phrase almond mom was coined for a reason, obviously based off Yolanda Hadid. But like almond mom is such a...
It's fitting and it's pervasive. Yeah.
It kind of gave a lot of people the language to actually realize the fact that their mum was, that their own mother played a prolific factor in like them developing eating disorders.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it's because like you project, it's kind of like you have this, like as women, you have all of your complexes, you have all of your hang-ups, your insecurities, and then you project that all onto your little girl, you know?
Which is so scary.
Everyone needs therapy before having children. Mm. Is what I think.
Everyone needs therapy, period.
Well, yeah, but especially before having children.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's the thing as well, which is kind of like taking this on. Like, my kind of stance on it is kind of that I get what they're saying, but I think there is also like a threshold where it's kind of like there are certain things that are yeah. very clearly yeah. wrong or stuff that might have happened yeah. that then afterwards it's kind of like, okay, I get that, like, it's learned behaviours, but also, like, you would have known that's wrong, and the fact that you didn't then take the time to actually try and get help about it actually is somewhat selfish on your part, like, for not...
Sometimes they just believe that things... Oh, sorry, I interrupted
No,
you.
Go on.
Sometimes they just believe that things... Like, okay, so I'm going to be, like, a bit forthcoming here, but, like, I've had a situation with my dad, like, recently, a few months ago, where... other elders in my family had to come in and like mediate a situation, and basically my dad like, you know, he did something very bad, very problematic, and then my uncle, my dad's older brother, sat there and said, like, why are you doing this to your daughter, why are you behaving like this? And my dad just turned around and went, well, that's how we were brought up, that's what our dads did to us, you know what our dad did to us, you know how our dad spoke to us, you know, our dad threw us out of the house every other week. And my uncle was like, yeah, but that was then, and that's a different generation. Like, you know, that we were brought up in the village. Like, why are you behaving like this now with your daughter here and now in Manchester in 2024? Like,
I think that's the thing as well that I'm also like, in terms of this, forgive your parents, they were learning as well. I'm like, okay, there are certain things that I'm like, okay, I can forgive, but it's sort of dependent on them actually owning up to it.
Right.
As
accountability
well.
Goes like, a long yeah. way.
I think what a lot of children, adults, people with parents need to hear is just I messed up, I'm sorry, and I understand what I did wrong. I wish if I could go back I wouldn't do it again, but how can I repair from here?
Hard agree.
I think that would go so far for so many people.
And you know why I hard agree, because that's the last thing that you will get from a South Asian parent.
Exactly.
South Asian parents specifically are so stubborn. And because we live in this culture where it's like, you know, respecting your elders is like so paramount. And I do agree with that, but to a degree. It's like to the point where you cannot even question your parents. You can't even call them out. There's no possibility that exists that the parent might humble themselves in front of their child. You know? Like that is, and it is, that's where it's, you know, these cultural factors are really, really kind of being detrimental, you know? And I've seen, there are changes in the community, and I've seen how significant they are, because I've seen how much they're having to, how hard parents have to work to kind of undo something that is so deeply enmeshed and embedded in our culture.
I also do think, this is, might be straying a little bit, but I do think, like, and I really hope this happens with time, and I think hopefully we are heading this way, but there needs to be more empowerment in women choosing not to have kids.
Oh, yeah, 100.
Because, so, like, from a cultural point of view, you have kids. In our community, you just have kids. You have loads. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, and we understand why those things are put into place, but literally that is what we're taught. You get married and you have kids. Some people from a very young age.
Yeah.
That is kind of what women were brought up to do, to get married and to have kids. There wasn't even a choice. We're luckily in a world where women actually can have the choice to, like, choose not to have kids. Like, you know, women that struggle to have children and to conceive were then looked down upon. That's where we were not even that long ago, a few decades ago, if not still now for a lot of people. But think about the amount of women who had kids because they were supposed to. They had no other choice but to do that because that's what they've always been told that they were supposed to do, and now have to look after these kids.
And they're horrible to them.
Like they weren't ready for them. Yeah. But even the women that did a great job, some of them still had, if they were given the choice, resentment. Might not have done it.
No, but that, you know how you're saying, like, you can have a woman who does, she never wanted to, she was kind of culturally kind of like coerced into a situation, she had the kid and she did her best with it. But I do believe in those situations, there's always a level of internal resentment that, as hard as they try to mask it or make up for, compensate for it, it does come out. And like, I think kids sense those kinds of things as well,
100%. You know? 100%. And I think you mourn the life you would have had, sort of thing. Like, there's always a flip side of it that you can always think about, of like, God, what if I just never did this?
And then you end up taking it out on your kids, and that's not fair.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even think that's exclusive as well to South Asians.
No,
like,
it's not.
I don't think it is.
I think, like, certainly, like, a couple, going back a couple of generations, like, it was very much like a worldwide thing for women. Like, yeah.
But then I think specifically in South Asian communities, obviously this is everyone as well, but like the amount of women that weren't allowed to study, get an education, get a job, they were just at home with the children. I personally would go mad.
Yeah, 100%. I literally, like, I had a facial yesterday, and my facialist, she was a lovely Bangladeshi woman in her early 40s, and I literally just told me her whole life story, and it was exactly this. It was this thing where she
I can't even explain, like, they weren't given a choice. It was just what you did.
100%. Like, that's like, we're talking about this, like, and it's not like a cultural artifact. It's real life. Like, literally just yesterday I had a conversation with someone about this. That's how common and prevalent it is, you know?
And it's still happening to this day to young girls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the moral is, firstly, be very careful about who you have kids with. Think very carefully about if you actually want children, and go to therapy.
Yeah.
Go to therapy.
Yeah. Agreed. Right. Moving on to the final segment of the show.
It's freezing in here.
Yeah, it is actually quite cold in there. Have you guys seen the story about the 18-year-old in Dubai? Have you, Simran? Okay, right.
I'm not on socials right now, by the way. All my socials are deactivated.
Right. So, a British 18-year-old, who's male and black, he is facing two decades in Dubai prison after engaging in a sexual relationship with an Indian British 17-year-old girl a couple of months younger than him. For context of how close they are in age, she is actually now turned 18. So it's actually like...
In while they were in Dubai?
Yes. Yeah, so they were both in Dubai, I think, with their respective families. And they started a relationship.
Like a holiday thing.
Yeah, holiday thing. Right. They'd planned, when they go back to London, they had planned, okay, we're going to continue our romance there. The girl's mother waited until she and the girl were back in London, and then contacted Dubai police officials to let them know of the relationship whilst the guy was still in Dubai.
See wickedness.
Because there was one side that was like, it's their law. It would happen if it's not anything to do with race. Like, it would happen.
Yeah.
No, but this...
At the beginning. But then he said that.
No, I ain't even talking about the Dubai law. Forget, I mean, that's extreme. The Dubai law is extreme. That's not what this segment is about.
For context on the Dubai law as well, everyone's also making a thing about, oh, it's the 18-17 thing, but it's actually the fact that it's out of marriage that's the issue, basically.
Right, whatever. We know Dubai has quite extreme laws. That's not even in question. Whatever, that mother...
Yeah.
Calculated. Calculated isn't even. That's evil. Mm. That's genuinely evil. Like, I'm so sorry. Oh my God. Oh, I actually don't have words for that. Mm. That's a young boy. Yeah. That's a young boy who has been in consensual relationship with your daughter that she was just as much as part of. Like, there are so many ways you could forbid your daughter, if you're not happy with that union, which, by the way, probably does have racialized undertones to it. If you're not happy with that, you know, whatever, that relationship, you forbid your daughter from seeing her. You could take your phone away from her. Do what normal parents do. Don't send the boy to a jail for 20 years, ruin his life. Literally. 20 years is not a short time. It's not a slap on the wrist.
I think also in a place like Dubai, where they take this thing very seriously, I think prison would probably be at the lower end of what you could possibly expect to happen to him. Oh my God,
that is crazy. That is genuinely, genuinely deranged. That is deranged. That is not... How does that woman sleep with... That boy has a family. He has parents. Mm. He has a life. He's 18. He has his whole life ahead of him. He's the age mate
of your daughter. He effectively... You should see him as the same. Like,
right, exactly. As a parent. You get it. You get it. As a parent. If you are a parent, you have a duty... Listen, as adults, we have duty of care towards like all young, vulnerable children. And I truly believe that. But like this little boy has his whole life ahead of him. And you've like taken that away from him. Why? Because he dared to have relations with your daughter that she just as much consented to. That is crazy. No, I'm sorry. That woman is evil. That is, in my estimation, that is what I would call a level of evil.
It's just mad as well, the fact that, because you know that she knew what would happen if she was still in Dubai and she reported it, because that's obviously, mad. So they waited till they were back and then...
That's what I mean. Like, it's evil. It's so evil. Because it's like your daughter hasn't engaged in exactly the same transgression and yet you want him to be punished for it, but you'll save your daughter because you know how bad it is. Yeah. You know how disproportionate that punishment is. You know how awful it is for an 18-year-old to have 20 years of their life taken away from them.
Yeah.
Oh, you're disgusting. You're actually a disgusting person.
Mm. And so they're now pressing on David Lammy to sort this mess out, essentially, because I think as well as obviously him being foreign secretary,
right,
the 18-year-old is also a member of the Tottenham constituency. So, yeah.
Oh my God, this is like, you know them like Disney Channel films that you see, or like, you know them kind of like films that you see and it's like the parent pays you off behind the back, like, don't see my child again.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like that, but like on an extreme evil level. Like, why can't you just be a normal person?
Yeah, and also like you could
like
just...
what has he done wrong?
Yeah,
like,
why can't you just do it, go about it the normal way? Take her phone off her.
Take her phone off her, ground her, like be like, a normal parent. Also,
maybe even let the holiday fling happen and then when you get back to London be like, okay, let's reevaluate the situation.
You know what I mean? Like, give him a little there's many ways to give him, like, that kind of behaviour deserves, if you're not happy with it as a parent, that's your prerogative. That kind of behaviour deserves a little slap on the wrist. You know, as we say, take the phone off her, ground the girl, forbid her from seeing the boy, whatever. To condemn someone to 20 years in prison for something it is innocent. It's like, kids
fact,
do it.
It's the
like,
fact as well that, I know we're saying also like kid as well, but she was a couple months off turning 18. Like,
no, they're both kids.
Both kids. I know, but I'm also saying in terms of the way that they're dealing with her as well. Ultimately, I get that obviously, especially in South Asian households, turning 18 doesn't really mean that much. But in the eyes of the law as well, like, she was about to become an adult. Like, she was going to be able to make her own decisions.
That woman is
like
genuinely, genuinely horrendous. I'm so sorry. And I'm using really strong language here. But what she has done is genuinely despicable. Like, that is a despicable woman. I don't know how... Having a child at that same age, you know, as a parent, the hopes and dreams and aspirations that you have for your child's future, you know that your child is on the cusp of like the rest of their life, you know, and you know what an exciting and hopeful time that could be, to snatch that away from someone for doing something as innocent as having relations that all the kids do. You know, like, you're at that age, you're going to be sexually explorative. You like someone, you vibe with them, you're going to do that. Your daughter did it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a truly horrendous person.
Yeah. So hopefully David Lammy can sort it out, but
and I'm not going to say what happens to that woman, but I hope something happens to her, and I'm not going to say what.
Something along the lines of what Ben said earlier.
Something along the lines of what our Ben said.
Get Ben on the case.
We need to enact his karma.
Send him.
Enact his karma.
Forget David Lammy.
Ben's karma. That's the name of a song. Ben's karma.
Oh dear.
Nah, seriously though, she's dirty, bro. Like, she's nasty.
Yeah. Well, to round things off on a more positive note, Simran, the video that you sent earlier this week, let's just talk about that briefly, with the pilot.
I don't watch it.
The one that I thought was Wingstop.
Oh!
And then it wasn't.
Wait, what was it?
It was
pilot?
The pilot. Okay, when maybe we're not talking
I remember the video, but I forgot what it was. I remember that she
I remember you
it.
Talking about Wingstop, that's about it.
I think he was it was a pilot that was getting promoted or something, and it was... On what was the Sikh Guru Nanak's birthday?
No, guys.
You watched the wrong video
I
twice.
Lost, no.
I watched the wrong video twice.
It was the US returning looted artifacts back to India.
Ah, that's it, that's it, that's it, that's it. That's why the video
did,
I watched.
Why did that that link say first?
And you thought she was someone. She's sick, so it must be what she said. Oh, my God.
First time I clicked on this link that Simran sent, it sent me to the opening. And by the way, the message that Simran sent to me was, positive thing to talk about on the show. First thing it sent to was the opening of a Wingstop in Uxbridge, and I was like,
weird
flex.
Weird thing to celebrate, but I get it.
This is quite close.
One more Wingstop in the world.
And then the second time I opened it, it was this this Sikh pilot that was getting promoted on, what was it, last Saturday, Simran?
Gurpurab.
Yeah, he literally getting promoted on there, so it was like special day, whatever. But apparently it's a different thing altogether, so I don't know what's happening with that link.
Carlos!
Why are you yelling at me?
Your Instagram, your Instagram's broken. I just clicked the link.
That's the one that I saw.
The US returns looted artifacts worth $10 million back to India as an effort towards global repatriation.
Well...
At Keir Starmer.
Yeah, but I quote unquote said it's a good ish news segment. Because why did it take it in the first place?
Yeah.
Wingstop's better.
Wingstop Uxbridge.
There's a Wingstop at Powers Wood. I need to know what app it's
Guys,
on actually. what have you done?
I'm bleeding.
Yeah, what happened? Did you cut yourself?
I had a spot.
Oh.
Lovely. What were you
saying? Anyway, basically, I went to Ibiza in August. About a month before Ibiza, backstory. My gym is in a retail park. 90% of that retail park is junk food. I go on my favorite treadmill, which is in front of a big window. Wagamama's, Nando's, McDonald's, KFC, Burger King, Wingstop. The Wingstop's new, yeah, flipping everyone with their.
There's a new one near you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I literally said 1 minute ago, there is a new Wingstop in Pars
Wood. He literally said it at your face. Like, he was literally facing you and saying
Sorry, I was replying to my mom.
But I would say I need to know what app it's on so I can hold it.
I go on this treadmill, yeah, and I'm on the treadmill and I'm sweating my butt off. Ooh. And I see Wingstop bag after Wingstop bag. Man, this has been going on for months. It is so depressing. So basically, I was gymming hard before Ibiza. And then I said, after Ibiza, I'm going to Wingstop. Then it was my cousin's first wedding event. I was like, fine, after the wedding event. Then that turned to after the wedding. Then that turned to after my birthday. Then that turned to after Milan. Now it's after Milan and I've got nothing going on.
You got some self-control. Like, what do you mean? Like, you're waiting after all of these events. Self-control? I would have been gone.
I talk about it every day. And, guys, I deleted TikTok for a week. And now I've basically deleted it permanently. But sometimes I go back on it for like an hour every now and again.
Right. Do you have to go and like all of our stuff, yeah?
Yeah. No. I actually re-downloaded it because you were talking about our comments on something. So I went to go and see.
Okay.
So man, that's crazy. That is very impressive.
Yeah, what are you doing?
My whole
life,
For You page, not my whole For You page, but a lot of my For You page has now become these Americans, Raising Cane's, In and Out, Chick-fil-A, Wingstop, and they have the whole camera is food, like a platter, and they have a cup. Like this size, it's a cup and it's full of like
sauce.
Ranch sauce or just some kind of sauce, right? And they got like, they dip it and they eat it.
Oh, stop. I'm hungry, man. I'm hungry.
It's actually objectively disgusting to watch, but it's something so good about it.
Oh, the way they eat it is disgusting, yeah.
Disgusting. But I do think it's some kind of like fetish.
No, 100%. 100%. Also, Carlos, I just realized you said you need to find out what app it's on. Carlos, it's genuinely like a 4-minute drive from your house.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have to walk. That's long.
Wait, what? Are you being serious?
The Wingstop is a 4-minute drive from his house.
I know where it is.
2 minutes, let's be honest.
Oh my God.
I know where it is. Down
Where the Nando's is and the Cineworld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guys, shall we get her on the 5th?
Yeah.
We'll get Wingstop on the 5th.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Fun. Sorted. Cool. Well.
And you know what? Today would have been the perfect day to get it when my vegetarian friend's coming over.
Ugh. Cute. What are you going to eat?
Not Wingstop. Probably just get her a mukplant. No, we no, we no, we're not eating McDonald's.
Yeah.
No McDonald's.
No. Anyway,
thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in. Well, actually, next week, I am actually not here. I am going.
Where are you going?
I'm going to London with my friends. So I'm not going to be here. So I'm thinking what I'm actually going to do is put out my interview that I did with Saloni about her new EP, Rani. You should go listen to that. So I'm going to put that out next week, which means that our next actual episode that we are going to be recording is going to be our 4-year anniversary.
That works out perfectly, actually, because I can't do next week either.
Okay, well, great.
Me neither.
Cool. All turned out for the best. So, yeah, we will...
Yay, see you guys on the 5th.
See you properly in a couple of weeks for our 4-year anniversary.
Kisses.
Bye. Bye.